Live by every word. That is the challenge and the opportunity the Bible gives to you. This program examines the actual words that have proceeded out of the mouth of God Himself, so we can use them to guide our paths and live by them in our everyday lives. This is Live by Every Word.
Thanks for joining me today here on Live by Every Word. I'm Dwight Falk. This is Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. And we're online at kpcg.fm and have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Well, if you were alive when Christ was on this earth during his first coming and you could spend some time with him, I imagine you'd have a lot of questions you'd like to ask. And if you could ask him just one question, I think many of us would have the same question in mind. And thankfully for us, it is a question that the disciples also had in mind, and they asked him. They wanted to know when Christ would return again. When would he return? They were so excited about his second coming and about the plan that he had shown them and taught them about. And they knew bad times were coming on this earth to a certain extent, and then Christ would return. And they wanted to know when these things would be. Matthew 24 and verse 3, we can see this exchange. Let's look over there. If you have a Bible, please get it out. We can look at these together. This is Matthew 24, very famous prophecy, very pivotal prophecy in the Bible. And it's known as the Olivet Prophecy because it happened there on the Mount of Olives. It says in verse 3 of chapter 24 of Matthew, "And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives," I'm talking about Christ, of course, it says, "the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of your coming? And of the end of the world," or that should be end of the age, the end of man's age, man ruling over man. When is this going to come to an end? And they talked to him privately about it. They had that special relationship with Christ, and he talked to the multitudes in parables to cloud the understanding to them because it wasn't time for them to understand. But he did speak openly to his disciples, so they asked him privately. When is Christ going to return? When are you going to return, they asked. And that's a great question. I'm glad they asked that question, aren't you? Because then we have Christ's answer. And again, it's important to note here that the disciples asked Christ when this current age would end. They weren't talking about the total destruction of the physical planet, although, as we'll see, it's going to become pretty destructive here on this earth. But they were talking about the end of the age. If you look at the RSV, that translates this passage as close of the age instead of end of the world. The Greek word translated as world in the King James Version means age. So when is this age going to end? You know, man ruling over man, all the corrupt forms of government and the pain and the suffering that man brings upon himself. When is this going to come to an end? And so the disciples asked this great question. Here's a quote from the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This is a free course at thetrumpet.com, and if you have not signed up for it, please do that. It's a great course to take. It says, Jesus proceeded to answer the disciples' question by giving them an outline of events to take place prior to his return to earth. So here Christ goes into an outline of events. You know, maybe they would have preferred him to give an exact date and time, although if he did that and they realized it was going to be about 2,000 years later, I'm sure that would have been somewhat discouraging, and they wouldn't have been as effective in the work that Christ had for them to do, but he gave them an outline of events. And so we have this outline recorded for us, and we can see that just before Christ's return, there will be great trouble on the earth. Real upheaval, real trouble. Notice Matthew 24 and verse 21. Christ said, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be." So this is a time of trouble worse than anything that's happened before. And we've had some bad things happen on this earth, to say the least. So this gives you an idea of what Christ was talking about, how bad things are going to be. And then further down in verse 22, he says, "Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." Now, no flesh saved, and it should be saved alive. In other words, the physical flesh that lives on this earth, humans, other living creatures, wouldn't survive what's coming unless Christ stopped it. This isn't talking about salvation. Remember, most people aren't called to salvation at this time. The Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course notes this: the Moffat translation renders this verse clearer as not a soul would be saved alive. This verse, then, is not referring to spiritual salvation at all, but to being saved from physical destruction, from premature death. Premature death, physical death. The RSV renders this passage as no human would be saved. So Christ wasn't just speaking about people living around Jerusalem. You know, somebody could be critical of these verses and say, well, he was just talking about Jerusalem, just the people that live there. Well, there's people all over this earth, right? Of course there are. And he said there wouldn't be anyone saved alive if he didn't come back and intervene at the time of the end. And so there's people all over this earth. So he was referring clearly to worldwide calamity. He was talking about people living all over this earth. That amount of death is hard to wrap our minds around, and it's not something, of course, we naturally want to think about, but we do have to consider the seriousness of what Christ is saying here. And also, remember, this is an outline of events leading to his return, so we can have an idea of how close we are to Christ's return. If you think about today's nations, many of them have nuclear weapons that can destroy entire cities. At the time that Christ was talking, there was, of course, the Roman Empire. They were powerful. They could do a lot of destruction, and they did. But if you didn't live in an area controlled by that Roman Empire, that wouldn't affect you too much. But today there are weapons that can affect every country on this earth with a matter of pushing a button. You know, if you read some of the history of, say, the Soviet Empire, well, when different leaders come into place there, they get what's called the nuclear suitcase. The nuclear suitcase, and they have access to launch nuclear weapons. And that's true of different countries as well. But that's something that people have to keep in mind, that there are people on this earth, leaders, that if they so chose, could launch nuclear weapons that would destroy cities. And of course, if one group started, then another group would join in, and we would have what's referred to as MAD, which is mutually assured destruction. And that's partly what's kept things at bay for a while. Obviously, God's the one that's in charge of the timing of everything and what he allows and doesn't. But mankind has looked at each other and said, well, you know, if Russia launches a weapon and the U.S. launches a weapon, or if Europe launches a weapon, one of these nuclear devices, well, then another group would do it, and all of a sudden everyone's dead. So people think, well, maybe no one will ever launch one of those. Well, the history is, of course, that man has never invented a weapon he hasn't used. Never has. It's amazing to think about the power that man has developed to destroy himself. There are over 13,000 nuclear warheads on this earth, probably more. That's plenty of power. Russia has what is called the Satan II missile. You've probably heard of that. It's been in the news for a while. Business Insider wrote about this in 2018. They said one Satan II ICBM, or intercontinental ballistic missile, could pack as much as 8 megatons of TNT-equivalent explosive power. That's more than 400 times as strong as either bomb the U.S. dropped on Japan in 1945. And we just passed the anniversary of that bombing, and there were some stories about that. And this would be far stronger, 400 times as strong as either bomb. And it says both of which of those bombs in 1945 combined led to roughly 150,000 casualties. We all know that history. We've probably read about it, or maybe you've seen a documentary or something. Terrible destruction there that brought World War II to a close. Well, these current weapons are so much more powerful. So much more powerful. Thinking about these weapons is really terrifying. And that's probably why people don't think about them too much. But it is the world in which we live. And then you add to that the social unrest that we see, economic turmoil, disease pandemics, and reactions to those. This disease pandemic that's been going on lately, it has caused some death and some problems. And, of course, it's caused a lot of difficulties with economies shutting down. Imagine what would happen if it was a disease pandemic where if you got it, you did die. Most people don't die if they get coronavirus. So some do, but most don't. But what if it was something where you did die as soon as you got it? Can you imagine the panic, the chaos, the anarchy? You know, there's a lot of terrible things on the horizon. And Christ gave an outline of that in Matthew 24. So God's people, of course, have to be concerned, have to be watching and praying. But we don't have to be afraid if we walk by faith in obedience to God. Christ has plenty of power to deliver people. He's going to stop all the destruction coming on this earth with his power. But there's a lot of destruction coming because of man's ways, man's rebellion against God. Notice Mark 13 and verse 20. Here again, Mark 13 and verse 20, it says, "And except that the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh should be saved or saved alive. But for the elect's sake, whom he has chosen, he has shortened the days." Thankfully, God does have a group of people supporting his work and doing his work. And for their sake, he's going to stop this destruction because he has great plans for this earth and for all people. The Correspondence Course says these verses mean that just as originally planned, Jesus Christ will intervene at the very moment humanity would otherwise destroy itself. By his direct intervention, he will cut short the days of man's rule over man, which would otherwise lead to the destruction of all human life on earth. Now, how bad is it going to get on this earth? Well, we don't have to guess, because Christ explained it, if people will believe him. Look at Mark 13 and verse 19, backing up here just a bit. It says, "For in those days shall be affliction, such as was not from the beginning of the creation which God created unto this time, neither shall be." So this is going to be the worst time. Nothing as bad came before it. Nothing as bad comes after it. This is it. The worst. You can look at Jeremiah 30 and verse 7. God showed Jeremiah how bad it would get. And Jeremiah said that there was no time like it. No time like it. So different prophets over the years have seen these things in vision. And in some cases, it made them sick physically to see the destruction that would come upon this earth. Christ prophesied all of this. You know, sometimes people will hear about these prophecies and get a little bit, discouraged, I suppose, and say, well, I don't like to hear that. That's a pretty hard thing to say or to talk about. But this is what Jesus Christ said. These are Jesus Christ's words. It's his prophecy. The disciples asked him a direct question. Tell us, what are the signs that are going to be before your coming in the end of this age? And he said, okay, well, let me tell you. And this is what he was talking about. A time like no other time. Trouble like no other time of trouble. Can you see the seeds of that on your nightly news? I think we all can. But just think about this for a second. Jeremiah, here in Jeremiah 30 and verse 7, said that there would be no time like it. And we've read Christ say the same thing. You know, no suffering like it before or after, this being the worst. And, well, we can look at history in this world. World War II is the deadliest military conflict in modern times. And somewhere between 75 and 85 million people died during that conflict. 75 and 85 million people. It affected a whole generation and then some. People still talk about it today, although it fades from memory as more and more people die and time passes, people that, you know, lived in that time period. But 75 to 85 million people, that was only about 3% of the world population at that time. 3%. The time that's coming is going to be far worse. So you think about the damage done in World War II, and it still only killed about 3% of the world population. The coming conflict, the Great Tribulation, and the Day of the Lord will be far worse. That's the reality. That's the times that we're in. Notice Joel 2, verses 1 through 5. Joel giving, again, a picture of what's coming. He says, "Blow you the trumpet in Zion. Sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble." So again, this is more than just people living in Jerusalem. This is all the inhabitants of the land. "For the day of the Lord comes," it says, "and it is near at hand." A day? What kind of a day is this going to be? Well, a day of darkness and of gloominess, a day of clouds and of thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountains. And then it talks about the military forces you can expect to see. "A great people and a strong, there has not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations. A fire devours before them, behind them a flame burns, and the land is as the Garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness, yea, and nothing shall escape them." You can read about what Eastern Europe was like after the Asiatic hordes came through in World War II. That Red Army came blasting through. There's plenty of history on that. And one account that I read talked about a forested area there in Eastern Europe, right by the Oder River. And after those Asiatic masses came through, the forest was gone. The forest wasn't there anymore because they just devoured everything in their path. And that was World War II. This is going to be worse. Verse 4 says, "The appearance of them is as the appearance of horses, and as horsemen, so shall they run. Like the noise of chariots," it says in verse 5, "on the tops of mountains shall they leap, like the noise of a flame of fire that devours the stubble, as a strong people set in battle array." So Joel, seeing this vision, again, it's a lot of weaponry and such that he wasn't familiar with, so he's trying to describe it to us. But we get the point. Great military conflict is coming. The course notes that Joel's God-inspired prophecy pictures the very same time of trouble prophesied by Christ. Jeremiah and Daniel, you can read about that. Daniel mentions some about this time too. It says, "This prophecy refers to events soon to occur at the close of this age. For only in this age of nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons has such widespread destruction been possible." You know, we didn't even really talk about the biological and chemical weapons that are out there, but you know they're out there too. "Never have we been in a time where these things are possible. The destruction of all of mankind." So you know we're at the time of the end. Because Christ said, at the time of the end, if he didn't intervene and stop it, there'd be no flesh saved alive. Well, the weaponry to destroy all flesh is a fairly recent invention. That's the time in which we're in. Now, God showed the Apostle John a vision of the modern weapons of our day. And, of course, John had never seen anything like it. And so he was describing it the best that he knew how. And we read about this in Revelation 9. Think about this. Think about the modern weaponry. Revelation 9, verses 7 through 10, it says, "And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle, and on their heads were as it were crowns like gold, and their faces were as the faces of men, and they had hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions, and they had breastplates as it were the breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle, and they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months." So John didn't know what helicopters and fighter planes and all those things were, so he's trying to describe it the best that he can, and it doesn't take much imagination to know what he was looking at. You know, they talk about the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle. Where we are here in Edmond, Oklahoma, the headquarters of Herbert W. Armstrong College and the Philadelphia Church of God, we aren't far from a military base, and they fly some of their military aircraft around doing different practice maneuvers, I guess, and things. And I'll tell you, there have been plenty of times I've been sitting in my office and the building almost starts to shake. Sometimes it does start to shake a little bit. and you hear these massive helicopters going over, shaking the building, these military aircraft. And that's just usually one or two of them. I just think, wow, what if there were 50? What if there were 100? What if there were 200? Imagine the sound. Imagine the sound. It shakes the building. There's unbelievably powerful weapons out there today. And as much as they keep talking about peace and peace, well, they're developing more and more weapons for war. Verses 17 and 19 here of Revelation 9, it says, "And thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them having breastplates of fire and of jacinth and brimstone. And the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions, and out of their mouths issued forth fire and smoke and brimstone." Well, he's not talking about a dragon here, as sometimes you might see in a TV show or something. He's talking about weapons that fire out missiles and rockets and all of those things that we're very familiar with from news footage and such. Verse 18, "By these three were the third part of men killed." The third part of men? You start doing some math there, that's a lot of people. That's more people than died in World War II. "The third part of men were killed by fire, by smoke, by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. For their power is in their mouth and in their tails. For their tails were like unto serpents and had heads, and with them they do hurt." Yeah, they do hurt, all right. And now you can imagine down through the years, people reading these prophecies before the invention of the modern weaponry that we have, and it would be fairly perplexing. You'd think, well, what is he talking about? What does this mean? I don't understand it. But today we do understand it, don't we? Again, it doesn't take a lot of creative thinking to understand what he's looking at here. You know, some combination of modern military warcraft, whether it be helicopters or fighter planes and who knows what else. I mean, rocket launching, nukes, who knows what he all saw exactly, but we can definitely tell it was modern weaponry. Modern weaponry. Are we in that time of the end? Christ said, we read it in Matthew 24. At the time of the end, before his second coming, he would have to come back and intervene, or else there would be no flesh saved alive. And there was going to be a time of trouble, such as was not since the beginning of the world, to this time known or ever shall be. The worst time of suffering ever. You don't have to wonder if we're in the time of the end. Just look at Christ's words and then look around. The Correspondence Course says, "John described what he saw in a vision of end time events," talking about this passage in Revelation here. "God had miraculously revealed it to him." It says it was a mysterious, frightening spectacle. The creatures he saw were obviously symbolic of weapons God knew man would be capable of inventing in the end time. Who else could know that? Only God knows what will happen in the future. Only God knew what weaponry there would be. Only God knew that. Man would never know that. That's the time that John saw, that Joel saw, that Daniel saw, that Christ prophesied about as well directly. That's the time we're in today, you and me. And so as Christ told his disciples, he would return when man was ready to annihilate himself off this earth. At no time in man's history has the weaponry been available to destroy all flesh until our time today. Our lives today, the time that we are in. So there's some pretty frightening news there for sure. And we have to pay attention to it. We don't want to bury our heads in the sand. There's trouble on the horizon. And more it's coming very close to home for many people. But the great news is the rest of that prophecy. Christ said he would return and stop it. He would return and stop it. So we don't want to just focus on the fact that a time of suffering is coming. We have to pay attention to that, but we have to also really put our hope in the fact that he's returning to stop it, and he's going to set up God's government on this earth. He's going to rule, and those people that are supporting his work today, and all those throughout the ages that have supported God's work and been called and served God in any way possible, they're going to help Christ rule this earth. That's the time we're in today, a time when we are very close to seeing war and trouble break out like never before, but also very close to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth to stop warfare once and for all. It's an exciting time to be alive. That's all the time we have for today on this edition of Live by Every Word. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm Dwight Falk. Until next time, let's all strive to more perfectly live by every word of God.
You've been listening to Live by Every Word on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.